The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, the topic for today I was thinking of discussing is to look at the benefits of retreat practice. Since the last time I was here, I was going on a retreat, and now I'm back. And we could, you know, benefit from this, obviously, by going to a retreat center and practicing there. But I think there's also some benefits that can that we can already have at home. So I'll first go into more of a retreat center setting, and then also talk about at home practice. And I just came back from a relatively long retreat. It was a little over 5 weeks or so, I think. And I remember that when I just started meditating and I went to the local sangha in my hometown back in the Netherlands where I was living at the time, my teacher said that she was going to go for a six-week retreat to IMS. And I was like, why would you do that? That seems so long. And I'm not sure if that, you know, why not just do a weekend or a week or something? And her response was basically, well, it deepens the practice if you go for a longer retreat. And of course, we don't all have that option. I mean, maybe we have to work or circumstances don't allow us to go that long. But you might have done a retreat already, or maybe multiple, or even one of those long ones of multiple weeks or months or even years. But for those maybe a little less familiar with retreats, like, why would we even go on a retreat? Like, what I was wondering, like, or, you know, what is a retreat? And also, how can our home be a retreat center in a way? And so what a retreat is that it's basically time for some seclusion. And that's actually what the Buddha advises us to do. In the Majjhima Nikaya, in the Satipatthana Sutta, he says that a practitioner gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down, having folded their legs crosswise, set their body erect and establish mindfulness in front of them. Ever mindful, they breathe in, and mindful, they breathe out. So the Buddha advises us here to go to a secluded place, like the root of a tree or an empty hut, and to meditate there. And nowadays, we gotta go to like a retreat center or a monastery. And I don't think there's a need to sit in a cave in the Himalayas or alone in the forest at the root of a tree. You know, we don't have to completely be alone somewhere. It's also can be very valuable to practice in community. That can be a real supportive aspect of a retreat, actually, in a retreat center or a monastery. And we can retreat, we do retreats of, you know, any type of length, from a day to, you know, several months or years. And what we do is we meditate on a retreat. Usually there's this schedule of alternating sitting and walking meditation. Often we get instructions around how we do this, walking and sitting and meditation. And we get Dharma talks, like we often also hear on the Tuesday mornings that we, you know, offer a talk of about half an hour or so. And on some retreats, there's some mindful movement. And usually you have what is called a yogi job. So it's kind of a work meditation. So you do dishes or clean the bathrooms or whatever it is that is needed to support the community. And then usually you also have a practice meeting with the teacher. And this is all done in silence except for the practice meeting, of course. So it's called noble silence, which helps to, you know, turn the attention inwards. So retreat time is really about simplicity and renunciation, simplifying our lives and renouncing our normal daily life with all its busyness, all its things to do. you know, we can do this, you know, for a day or longer. And that is actually already a reason to go on retreat, to, you know, not have to deal with all this busyness that we usually have in our lives, our work, our to-do lists, commitments, appointments, our family and social life. I always find it pretty nurturing to, you know, not have to deal with all of that for, you know, a short or a long while. Even just a day long can already be nurturing. And there's this, I heard about this engraving on a tombstone. I'm not sure if it's real, but it's interesting. It says, "Got it all done, died anyway." You know, so it's, you know, what is important to us? What matters to us? Having finished that to-do list, or living, you know, a life with care for what really matters to us, like living intentionally. And on a retreat, we can really slow down and help us to tune in to what matters to us. And then we might realize that maybe slowing down a little bit in our life, or maybe having more emphasis for the, you know, caring for ourselves and our loved ones might be important to us. And not so much all this running around and getting all these things done so that we can have that engraving on our tombstone. So, you know, it can connect us to whatever is, you know, most important to us in our lives. And, you know, often we, you know, renounce our phones and internet and other, you know, devices and stuff. We renounce contact with others and except with the teacher, and we read usually no books or other things, and we don't journal usually, you know, and that all makes us help to connect to the present moment without any distractions, instead of always trying to get somewhere else. You know, normally we try, you know, what's the next thing we're going to do? Like, after this, we need to do that and that and that, and we have this whole list of things we might do in our life. So it's really an opportunity to connect to ourselves and our inner world. And this can be really nurturing for our nervous system. Our nervous system can get a little overwhelmed in our daily lives. And often what happens when we go on retreat is that we feel pretty tired in the first few days. So that's kind of a sign of, you know, this overly busyness that some of us have. And when we slow down, then we might start to appreciate actually that a slower pace might be nice. And it in Lion's Roar, Christina Skarda makes an important point. She says, "You are not escaping the world. You are getting ready to fully embrace it." So that's what the retreat is usually about. It's not like an escape. It's more about giving ourselves a chance to settle and to, you know, disengage from all the normal stuff and deepen into our practice so that we can then fully embrace the world and our lives after we come out. And it is like my teacher back then said in the Netherlands, it is deepening our practice when we go on retreat. Of course, we can read countless books and listen to Dharma talks, but that is not, you know, nothing compared to actually experiencing the teaching for ourselves. Not to say that books and Dharma talks aren't supportive, they are, and they often point us in the right direction, and then we can practice with that. And when we spend some time in silence, when we are meditating, whether that is, you know, for a shorter or longer period, it really helps us to, you know, work with this deeper conditioning that we all have, all these patterns that we have that might be unwholesome and not so helpful in our life. Patterns that might stand in the way of, you know, healthy relationships or a healthy relationship with ourselves. And this silence, this deeper work that we can do on a retreat or even in our daily lives, can really weaken those patterns and help us to gain insight into patterns and conditionings. And that really has the potential to transform us. And sometimes when we are practicing in silence for a longer period, like on a retreat, some, you know, surprising things can come up. Like I was once on a retreat, it was my second retreat I ever did, and I saw this pattern of aversion arising. Like I was aversive towards almost everything. Like the weather wasn't good enough, and the food wasn't good enough, and I didn't like the chairs we were sitting on in the dining hall, and people were making too much noise, and you know, this went on and on and on. And at one point I just saw this like, oh wait, there's this aversion towards almost everything, like, wow. And you know, that didn't make that pattern go away right away, but it made me really conscious of it. And just seeing that over and over again during this retreat and afterwards helped to slowly but steadily dismantle the pattern towards where it's, you know, practically non-existent right now. And that's the power of just over and over seeing these patterns and conditionings. And, you know, sometimes it's this gradual process, and sometimes it can be an insight that is just kind of like right away dismantling something. That can also happen. It can be really powerful. And when we work on all these patterns and conditionings, when we look at them, open to them, then we basically get better at this embracing the world, as Christina Scarda said in that quote that I just wrote, the Jesuit. And then this silence and the stillness of a retreat, you know, makes that we, you know, that we can become free of these social obligations that we normally have. Like, we don't have to say good morning to anyone. We can just, you know, do our own thing. We don't have to ask, like, how are you doing? And, you know, all these social things that we normally go through, we can just let them all go. And on my first retreat, I really liked that. I was like, oh yeah, I can just do my own thing here and focus on my own inner world. I don't have to worry about anyone else. And not as a, you know, as an unsocial thing, just as a, you know, way of being as well, another way of being. And at the same time, so we're not really communicating to anyone, and we're not doing the social and, you know, interactions and stuff. But at the same time, we are in community with these other people. We are meditating together. And meditating together can really be a support, because we see others meditating. And for example, when we are a little tired or a little out of it, we might, you know, see others sit in the hall or walk, or, you know, see them do, you know, the normal daily schedule. And then we're like, okay, even though I'm tired, I'm going to go for it too. That could be really helpful. And just knowing that there's these other people who are also interested in meditation and developing the heart and mind can be really inspiring. It also kind of creates this field of this energy field together. When you're in a group, even online, that can be felt, just this feeling of meditating together. And the teacher Susie Harrington says that meditation is a solitary activity best done in groups. So yeah, I think that's a real truth to it, because the group can so be so supportive, but we are doing it on our own. Like I was saying before, we are focusing on our own world, on our own inner world. And also, like, if we try to do a retreat by ourselves, just, you know, at home, or we maybe rent a cabin or something like that, that can be really challenging, especially if we haven't done a lot of retreats yet. You know, at some point when we've done maybe a ton of retreats and we've done a few long ones and whatever, you know, then it might be less challenging. But still, it can sometimes, be so, helpful to practice in community, even if we're very experienced practitioners. And of course, a retreat is not a vacation. It's not always going to be pleasant, because it's going to bring us into contact with those patterns and conditionings that might not be so pleasant to look at. But usually looking at the patterns and conditionings is really rewarding and can really give us insights, little insights, tiny little insights, or big insights. And all insights are welcome and have the potential to transform us, or to have that gradual path that I was saying, little by little, change can happen. And of course, there are spiritual goodies that might happen when we're on retreat. Like peace and easefulness and rapture and joy and bliss. Those are all experiences we can have on retreat. And also in our daily life practice, of course. So what happens that, we gather the mind, and the mind gets a little stiller, and then these spiritual goodies can arise. And this is not really like a main reason to do the practice, and it's also not something to get attached to, but it is a very important support on our path. Because our path's not only just all dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, and the path's not only about facing all those difficulties and patterns and conditionings, etc. It's also about noticing wholesome states of mind and these pleasant things that arise, like joy and kindness and peacefulness, and cultivating those aspects as well, growing them, enjoying them, really savoring them and letting them, sink into our being. That's a huge, huge kind of like help and support on our path, to help us go forward. And so retreat is a real great way to care for ourselves. And also those we encounter in life, like everyone we encounter might benefit from our retreat practice in a way, because we become a better human being, or we become maybe a little bit more kind, a little bit more caring, a little bit more peaceful, whatever it is that happens for us. It's an opportunity for us to pause and reflect and get in touch with what matters. And the New York Times, there was an article by someone who went on a retreat, and it said, and that person said, on a meditation retreat, the goal was to be mindful of each step, each bite, each breath, to gain insight without distraction. Think of it as a spa for the mind. I thought that was pretty cool, see it as a spa for the mind. But it can be, difficult to go on a retreat, actually, because we need to get time off of work or family life and other obstacles that we might have, financial obstacles. But luckily, there are also ways to get some of those retreat benefits just like at home. We can just, at home, practice at home. And Sayadaw Utechaniya, he says the following. He says, a meditation center is just a place for learning, a kind of training camp or mindfulness workshop. Keep practicing in daily life. Do not think it is difficult. Just try again and again. Developing awareness is a lifelong journey. There is no need to hurry or worry. It is important to learn how to practice correctly, so that you can effectively apply whatever you have learned in everyday life. When you are able to apply what you have learned in any life situation, your awareness is superior to the kind of awareness that you develop by just walking up and down the meditation hall. End quote. Some of the important points that Sayadaw makes here, I think, is that it is a lifelong journey, and so the good thing about that is that we don't need to hurry or worry, and it's not difficult. We can just try again and again. It's just a process we're going through. And he also says that when we practice in daily life, our awareness becomes superior over the awareness that we develop by just walking up and down the meditation hall. And I think that's really interesting, because we often, you know, think, oh, retreat practice, that's the real thing. But in a way, practicing in daily life is the real thing. That's the more difficult thing to do, to stay aware, you know, whenever, whatever we're doing in our daily lives. That's more challenging. And if we then go on a retreat, we notice, oh, wow, my awareness is actually pretty stable because I've been practicing just in daily life. And then the meditation retreat can be kind of a more of a support for our daily life practice. But it's not kind of a thing we need, or that is this big thing. It's just kind of like Sayadaw says, like a training camp we go to. And I sat with Sayadaw in Myanmar some years ago, and I remember that he was talking about this kind of thing, like, oh yeah, daily life practice, that's more important than here in the monastery. And so when I came back from my retreat, I actually made a little sign, carved out in wood, kind of for, I made it in wood, like it said, Daily Life Retreat Center. So that I could always remember, like, oh yeah, I'm in a daily life retreat center now. I'm not inside our retreat center, but in my own little daily life retreat center. And I put it in a place where I would see it every time I would enter my apartment. So we can see our life as our retreat center. And that's the beauty of Sayadaw's practice. So it, you know, it doesn't matter too much if you're at home or in a retreat center. And, you know, this method of open awareness that we often emphasize here during these Tuesday mornings is, you know, so suitable for our daily lives that it almost doesn't matter if we're in a retreat center or at home. And when I was in Myanmar, I met a nun and from Burma, and she said that Sayadaw was her teacher, and that he actually didn't let her ordain for several years because he wanted her to get daily life experience before she ordained for the rest of her life. He was like, you need to get several years of daily life practice before you should ordain, so that you, you know, have this good basis for your practice. I thought that was really interesting. And Sayadaw himself actually followed that path as well. He ordained several times during his life, you know, for, you know, up to a year or so each time, but he always came back to his daily life, and most of his practice was in daily life. And he literally, you know, lived in the marketplace. He literally worked in the marketplace of the town where he lived. I think in Yangon. And then at some point he felt ready to ordain, you know, with the intention for the rest of his life. But it wasn't, you know, until he had done so much daily life practice. And I think it's always good to get this reminder of practice in daily life. To remind us, like, yeah, let's have this intention to be aware of whatever we're doing, you know, whether it's the dishes, or we're going on a walk, or we're on the phone with a friend, or we're listening to a Dharma talk, whatever it is. And this can be quite a learning curve. Maybe you guys are pretty good at it by now, but in the beginning, when we try this practice of daily life, it can be hard to be aware. You know, we have to remind ourselves over and over and over again. So for beginners, I often offer some tools. And the first thing to think about is that we need an intention to be mindful during the day. This intention is what helps us to, you know, cultivate this mindfulness, this awareness during the day. This kind of an intention and interest to watch the mind, the body and the mind during whatever we're doing. Maybe seeing craving, aversion and delusion coming up. Or kindness and compassion and wisdom. Sayadaw says, let any experience arise, craving, aversion, delusion are objects like any other. Because we are getting to know them, there's no need to fear them. Just know that they are there. They're tools for you to further develop wisdom. So it's useful to see those patterns of greed, aversion, and delusion. And this will help us to gain insight and wisdom. And, you know, next to our intention and our willingness to look at craving, aversion, and delusion, we can also just have very simple tools like hanging up some reminders in our house and or even in our car, like some post-it notes like, oh yeah, be mindful, be aware. In the monastery with Teshania, there's on every door to every dorm room and stuff, there's a little note of says something like, be aware. Every time you open your door to your room, you see, be aware. So you get a reminder every time. And you can also set a reminder on your phone, just a kind of a random, maybe some of those apps that have a randomized bell go off. Or sometimes, I know Andrea also suggests to pick out an activity where you start with being mindful, like every time you walk through a door or every time you stand up, something you do regularly during the day. And every time you do that, that's kind of your awareness bell. And if you have the time, you can also do a half day at home. Like just spend a few hours meditating, really to support that daily life practice, or even a whole day or a weekend or whatever, you know, time you have. And sometimes here at IMC, day longs or half days are offered as well. And then you, if you do a half day or day long through IMC or to another organization, whether it's online or in person, you have this this extra benefit of practicing in the community, practicing together, and getting some meditation instructions if you feel like that's beneficial. I want to end with a quote from Sayadaw Uteshaniya. He says, meditation is for life, not just for short practice periods. If you practice for 10 days, you will change for 10 days. If you practice your whole life will change. I was thinking of maybe there are some people who want to share their retreat experience also for the recording and maybe some tips or tricks or maybe tips or tricks for daily life practice. If not, it's also fine. And then I'll just stop the recording. But if there is anything you feel inspired to share, then feel welcome.
I don't know that I have any tips. I just know that I have absolutely loved every single retreat I've ever been on, even when it's been a really hard retreat, emotionally challenging retreat, I guess is what I would call hard. Or maybe if something's physical going on, that can be challenging. But they're just a total blessing. And I agree that I have a teacher that says the retreat begins when you leave the retreat center.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's but the retreats are, it's like, I just, the analogy I came up with just now is like getting a vaccine, but that's not the right analogy, but it's like getting a boost, you know, and it gives renewed inspiration and deepening for the practice at home, the daily meditation, but also the how to live in a daily life practice. And I don't know a single retreat that I've been on and hasn't said, you know, the gold is in your life. But over time, you know, different lessons come through at different times, different insights or awarenesses or shifts in our being that allow that deepening in daily life. Not on itself, it takes intention to pay attention But then I find, I guess one thing is I'm finding really valuable in daily life is the Dharma. That sounds so simple to say, but the meditation's really helpful, but also all the reminders about the ways to orient our lives that's in the wisdom of the Dharma. All the different lists and the qualities and the Eightfold Path and everything. There's no, it's endless. It feels like the wisdom that can be gained from that, and that it's either validating or it opens up and deepens something and renews an intention for myself.
Yeah, wow, that's so beautifully spoken. Thank you. I can wholeheartedly agree with everything you said.